It's time for Security Now. Steve Gibson's here. We're going to have a follow-up on his amazing squirrel technology. We'll answer your questions, too. I'm back. Steve's back. Let's talk. Security Now is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Security Now is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Bandwidth for Security Now is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Security Now with Steve Gibson, episode 425, recorded October 9th, 2013. Squirrel and Q&A, number 176. Security Now is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code SECURITY. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with their free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Just use the offer code SECURITYNOW and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off on your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the offer code SN20. It's time for Security Now, the show that covers your security, your safety, your privacy online with the... What did you have? Just having a muffin? Steve Gibson's wiping his mouth off here.
That's okay. My coffee thermos. And there, I wiped the drip off.
Steve Gibson's here, the explainer in chief, the man behind Squirrel. Steve, I've been gone 3 weeks, and you announced a massive, major new initiative.
Yes.
Last week.
Yes.
By the way, was it Iaz or Tom? Who filled in for me? Was it Tom?
Tom did all three.
Thank you, Tom.
And there was just so much pressure that we were getting from our listeners that I thought it would be fun to do it. But then I thought, I can get you both. I can do it with Tom, and then
it's quite all right.
So
I would never want you to hold back. IBM used to do that. They would hold back technologies because they wanted to have something for next year. And I think that's reprehensible. If you've invented something, if you've innovated something, then why hold it back? And you know what I love about Squirrel, and I want you to explain a little bit to me for those who missed last week as I did. But what I love about Squirrel is you're not encumbering it. You say, this is patentable. It's a novel idea, but I'm going to give this to the world. And I think that's great, Steve. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I mean, there may be some parts about it that are novel, and I'm sure if it came from the typical corporate syndrome, there would have been attorneys scouring it, looking for little nooks and crannies to say where it was innovative. One of the things that's happened in this past week, it's hard for me to believe it's only been a week because it's just been an amazing reaction, just been phenomenal. I created a news group at GRC on our news server. 1 week ago in the morning before last week's podcast, and we're at over 1,100 postings.
Whoa!
There's a page now of projects that are underway among the SQRL, the squirrel pages at GRC. So a bunch of people are immediately racing to implement this on Android and iOS and web server platforms in every language you can imagine. I've even been contacted by the W3C, the HTML5 spec editor, who says authentication and login is like a serious problem. No one has solved it yet. This looks wonderful. Let's talk.
So let me see if I understand it. Sometimes paraphrasing is the best way. It is a way of using either QR codes or some other secret that's shared, authenticating yourself to web pages without giving... anonymously, effectively, without giving the web page any other information about you right? And not using a third party service. This is a transaction just between you and anywhere. Let's say let's pick a website. Let's say Google. Let's say Google decided to implement this, which would be wonderful. Then I would just explain if I've got this right. I would go to Google and say, okay, whip out your phone and snap this QR code, and then I would be logged in.
Right.
What? How does that work?
So, okay, the shortest way to say it is that you take a combination of your own sort of like grand master secret key, which is never used online, never leaves anywhere.
It's the equivalent of a private key in a public key cryptography system.
No, because it's because there you have a matching public key. Right. This is an absolute secret that is just randomly generated, and it's yours. And one of the questions that we have today is, well, what if someone else got the same one?
Right.
So, because and in a large population of people, there's the birthday attack problem,
right,
which is where it's surprising that how few people you need to have for any two of them to share the same thing, like to have the same birthday and so forth. So, you know, there's only 365 days in the year, so there's that many possible birthdays. How many people does you have to have together before any two of them have the same birthday? And the number's smaller than people suspect. But it turns out that's not a problem here. But so you get this incredibly random large number which you never disclose.
Okay.
That's the key. It is never disclosed.
It's kind of like your Bitcoin address, kind of, sort of?
Actually, it's very much. Bitcoin is also 256 bits. I've changed that, by the way, since last week. We dropped it from 512 to 256 just because there was no need for 512 bits.
Now, with Bitcoin, you can generate multiple addresses. Can I do that as well?
Yes, you can. And so you could have multiple users essentially defined in one little app. But let's take the case of one user. So you've got this 256-bit absolutely random thing that is uniquely yours. What this does is it combines that with the website domain, like Google.com, and then it uses that. It uses the combination of your super secret and the website domain where you're going to create a asymmetric key pair, to create the public and private key.
So it's like a hash of the two?
It does. It uses an HMAC operation, a hashed message authentication code, which is just it's a extra secure kind of hash. It just uses hashing operations a couple times to do essentially the same thing, but it's a little stronger in some ways than just a hash, because there is a vulnerability potentially because the domain name is being hashed with your secret key. It's better to use a message authentication code which is keyed by your secret key, and then you use that to hash the domain name. It's just technically better. So it creates a little more isolation for like things the user could control, like the domain name going into the hash. But so the idea is, armed with this unique key, every website you use generates on the fly a unique asymmetric key pair. And the point is that since your super secret master key never changes, every time you come back to that website, you get the same asymmetric key pair, you know, a private and a public key. Now, what we do with that is simple, really. The QR code that you mentioned, a phone can snap it, can scan it. And we simply take that and sign it with our public key, and we send that signature and the public key to the site.
Mm-hmm.
So the public key is our identifier for that site. So, for example, every time we go to Google, we generate the same key pair, and so we're going to have the same public key. So we always look exactly the same to Google. It doesn't, if we're completely anonymous, it knows nothing about us except this is our token. And but then the other cool thing is, since we've signed the QR code with our private key and we sent that along, Google is able to verify the signature with our public key, which is our identity, which proves to Google that we, the person who has this public key, also have the private key because we just signed the QR code that we were given. So it's very simple. There's like no extra moving parts. Everything is tightly locked together. Yet what this asserts is that the same person coming back to the site anytime in the future is the person that was originally identified.
As long as you keep control of your private key.
Yes. Yes, and that's one of the most important things. There's been fabulous discussion, for example, like people said, well, what about revocation if the key gets away from me?
One. Yeah.
And so it's absolutely true that there are things we're giving up when we cut out a third party. And that's the other issue, is that all of these other authentication identification systems.
You're talking about things like Facebook Connect or Google Connect or,
Yes.
Yeah.
But also there are committees and authentication proposals in the works, and they're so-called federated identity systems, more like the VeriSign deal, where remember that the original football that we talked about years ago, you know, this is my little PayPal football.
Right.
Well, when I give the number to PayPal, PayPal gives it to VeriSign. So VeriSign is a third-party authenticator.
Okay. And is that true? That's not true of Google Authenticator.
No. But see, the problem with Google Authenticator is that it's there you do have a shared secret. I've got that secret token that runs the sequence in my phone, and Google has the same secret that runs their sequence, so we can make sure that we agree. Now, while that's nice, and it is two-party, that is, there's no third party, the problem there is we have a shared secret. There is something for Google to lose. And the beauty of my approach is there's nothing for them to lose. They don't have a secret of mine. All they have is my identity, which is only valid for them. Because it comes from their web domain, when I go to a different website, I present a completely different identity, in no way connectable to the identity that I have for Google. So this creates a unique identity for every website on the internet, yet every time you go back, you're the same as you have always been for that site. And so, for example, the reason what's happening with Google Authenticator and the increasing number of sites that support it is now we end up with a growing list of six-digit numbers that are all changing. Why can't we use the same one for multiple sites? Well, we're back to the same password problem.
Right.
And that is each, you know, Google, people's databases are being hacked all the time. We just had a huge, you know, Adobe breach where they lost 1.2 million of their user accounts. So again, if you're going to share a secret like a password or like your authenticator, then there's the problem of you needing to have separate ones for each site and managing them separately. Here, there's no shared secret.
Okay, good. I'm sorry, you paused. Do you have two different coffee cups? It looks like you're double dipping there.
I have this little cup and a warmer, and then I've got my thermos is where the coffee comes from
after having been
transferred from the coffee pot.
So, as I remember, you had this all came to you in a flash, like Archimedes in his bathtub.
I was having coffee at IHOP while I was having breakfast,
of course,
on a Thursday morning about 6 weeks ago, and this just kind of like it's like, wait a minute. And I thought, well, okay, does this work? And so I thought about it for a few more minutes, and then I decided it seemed to. So I kept it to myself for about a week or two while I was continuing to work on wrapping up this phase of work on SpinRite. And then I said to the guys in the SpinRite development news group, I said, okay, look, I have to confess, I'm being distracted by something. We're going to get this work we're doing
Squirrel.
Now finished.
It's well named, I might add. Yeah.
What?
Squirrel?
Yeah. SQRL. Yeah. Yes. Now, one of the things that Tom mentioned, one of the first things he mentioned was, but what if I don't want to use my camera? What about just logging in with my laptop?
Well, that's the question. And what does it require for me to participate? First of all, and this might be the biggest hurdle, websites have to adopt it.
Yes. Well, okay, so that's the other thing, is that there's been some confusion. One of the things, the reason I consider this a low friction for adoption is, first of all, it's all open source. It's all open spec. It's all just there. It's also very simple. I mean, we're going to have apps, implementations of this a few weeks from now.
Wow.
So
there's already a Chrome extension. So, I mean, it's moving fast. It's moving
and
fast.
It's funny because I made a comment yesterday last week. I was wondering how long it would take Google to figure this out. And it was 4 hours, I think, from the podcast moment.
Well, that's great.
Where you put SQRL in and bang, Google knows all about
it.
Yeah,
they scan it fast. So, all right. So presuming there's adoption and there are good reasons to adopt it, what does it take for me to participate? Do I have to have a smartphone?
No. That's one of the first things we looked at was how do we eliminate the phone? Because a lot of people like the idea of the phone as a second factor, a physical second factor. And for example,
I use it at whatever a site offers it. It's great.
Yes. Now imagine in a library or a public kiosk, what this literally lets you do is snap a QR code that's being displayed on a computer you do not trust. And without entering any of your credentials, you're logged in. So, I mean, so that's really a change. That's really cool.
And there's no leakage of information at that point. I mean, nobody can come to that terminal and then figure it out or anything like that.
Correct.
I walk away with my phone and boom, we're done.
Yes. That whole computer and its connection got none of your information. What happened was that from its viewpoint, spontaneously, you were logged in at that site. It just kind of happened behind its back. So it has no secrets to disclose. There's nothing for it for the bad guys to get. No keystrokes to be logged, no malware to catch anything. It's just done. But many of us sitting at our computers at home, we have laptops and so forth. You know, yes, we have a phone by the front door charging, but and we'll use it when we're out and about. But right now, it'd be nice just to be able to authenticate with our computer. What the effort is that's underway is for an app to be installed like any other app, which registers the SQRL scheme in the same way that HTTP. If you click a link on your computer which has HTTP, your computer knows to launch the web browser and give it that link and to display it.
Right.
If you click a link that says mail to, that your computer knows your email client should be launched in order to start up a mail note. So similarly, an SQRL app on desktops and laptops, and in fact tablets, for example, it would register the SQRL scheme, which is what those first letters are called. So when on your desktop you go to google.com or amazon.com or whatever, and you see this little squirrel QR code, mm-hmm. you click on it. You don't use your camera. You actually click the little squirrel QR code because it is also a link.
Okay.
It's an optical link,
yeah.
But it's also an HTML link.
Mm-hmm.
So you click on it. And that launches the little authenticator, which is on your computer in the same way that a web browser is or your email client is. This is the little squirrel app. So it launches it, giving it that link. And so it then is able to handle all the authentication for you. And again, you just leave the login form blank and click login and you're logged in. So it is, again, completely seamless authentication.
Wow. You know, it reminds me a little bit of, have you looked at Duo Security? This is a multi-factor system that LastPass is using.
I haven't.
It's interesting. It's a new option on LastPass. They've added, in addition to YubiKey and Google Authenticator, something called Twofer, Duo Security, and TransSalt. I think it's TransSalt. But the way Duo works is when I open LastPass on a phone, it's the Duo app on my other phone that's been set up with Duo gives me an alert, and it says, hey, somebody's trying to log into LastPass on this device. Do you want to allow it? I say allow, and all of a sudden I'm on. It's very magical and mysterious, and I don't know if it's related or not, but it feels like that. It would be – so would LastPass be able to use something like this as a second –
It could. Yeah.
So it is – it could be used as second factor authentication.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not sure I completely understand it, but here's the good news. It's completely described in great detail on your website, grc.com/sqrl, and people can read about it. And how's the adoption been? I mean, it is only a week old, but people are...
Okay, so it couldn't be happening any faster. I was planning on continuing to flesh out the pages that I had been working on. For example, there is a page about attacks where I've enumerated all the different sorts of things that I can think of and that anyone has been able to think of that could go wrong.
Right.
And so that was the next thing I planned to work on. The problem is we've got about 20 people that like want to write it right now. And I said, and so I've switched over to, in fact, if you look at, there's a projects and implementations page where I'm following all of the projects that have been created. There's about four or five of them on GitHub and various other places. So I've switched over to, there's something called implementation details page, which is up now, which I spent Monday and Tuesday working on the last 2 days, because I need to present a proposed protocol because people insist on writing code right now. And so what will happen, Leo, is that I should tell our listeners that I am going to write one.
Okay.
I need to at least write
a reference one.
Well, yeah, I'm going to write a reference Windows, because I'm not a mobile platform developer, but I am a Windows coder, as everyone knows. I will write a Windows and Wine, so anyone with Wine and any Linux people will a reference implementation for the desktop and Windows laptop and Wine laptop application that will be, you know, of course, it'll be an assembler, so it'll be 2 KB long, and actually be a little longer than that because I'm going to have to bind in some libraries for the crypto, but it'll be super small. I will, of course, sign it with GRC's Authenticode certificate and make it available. So though there will be mine, but there will be a whole bunch of them. We're going to guarantee interoperability, and so the clients will be there. There's already a Drupal and WordPress plugins are coming. So the clients will all be free, and they'll just be there. And so as websites adopt this, people will begin to use it. And an example I gave was, like, how many times have we gone to a place where someone has done an interesting blog and you think, it'd be fun to contribute to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the thing wants you to go through all of this
rigmarole.
Yeah. And so sites are losing all kinds of valuable input because it's just too annoying to have to identify yourself.
And we face that in the way we do it, and it's not completely satisfactory, but we'll use Facebook Connect or Google Plus, or there are a number of these, right? And that makes it easy because you already have a Facebook account, and you see this in apps too. You just say, yeah, yep, sign in with Facebook. The problem is that Facebook's getting all that information. So this would be a similarly simple way to log in, but no one else gets it. It's between you, and there's no man in the middle issues with this. I mean, it sounds pretty good. You're using SSL, of course, in the transaction.
There's also no NSA in the middle.
Yeah, we like that too.
And see, all these other authentication technologies that are sort of out there churning and haven't really happened yet, they are so-called federated identity. There's people like VeriSign or someone. I mean, there's a so-called authentication service that you authenticate to, and then the site authenticates to, and that so you can cryptographically, you know, assert that you are who you are. But so can the NSA then offer them a national security letter and say, we want to know all the sites that this user has been going to, has been logging into. I think the day is past where anyone is willing to trust a third party, because we now know how vulnerable they are to, unfortunately, our own federal government.
Yeah.
And in fact, we'll
be talking
today.
So this is very timely in that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be talking. There was some news about Ladar Leveson and exactly what happened with Lavabit.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Our worst fears actually came to pass.
Well, I didn't want I apologize to everybody who listened last week. I didn't want for you to completely recap the show last week. I just wanted the executive summary of what SQRL is. And I know this is a Q&A episode. We're going to have a lot of questions about it as well, but
there have been lots of interesting issues have come up. It's my sense is, I mean, I have no horse in this race. I just sort of, you know as well as anyone, Leo, I have been focused on authentication as the problem.
It is
that needs to be solved,
and it really is. There's no question
passwords,
in my mind.
Perfect paper passwords, password haystacks. Yeah. You know, the grid, whatever that thing was, the Latin squares off the grid system. I mean, it's been on my mind, and so here was like, wait a minute, this solves a class of problems where a site wants to collect anonymous connections. And, you know, people have said, well, sites want to be able to leverage who you are and market to you and don't want you to be remain anonymous. Well, they're sort of confusing two things. This provides the identifier token, but then they could still have you fill out forms and, you know, email addresses and first and last name.
They could attach stuff to it if they wanted
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. Right. But it's not necessary.
That I like. So I have to say it's very intriguing, and unfortunately, you know, like a lot of good ideas, it requires a groundswell of support from everybody. I think the need is clear, and I think the idea is good. I just hope that that everybody goes, okay, yeah, we'd like to do this. You know, you get a few major. You know, the problem is that neither Google nor Facebook really wants anything like this, because they've got their own solutions which give them information, and they want that information. We have to demand this, frankly.
And again, it could be easily added. Look how long it has taken sites to finally adopt two-factor authentication. I mean, one of the stories today is that Evernote just finally added second-factor authentication. Yeah. After that massive February breach that they suffered, and they promised to do it, and they're finally rolling it out today.
What? So, no, they've had it for a while.
Evernote?
Yeah. I've been using it for at least a month.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just saw the story that they were
No. It's been going on for a while, and it's great, and I use it. In fact, it uses, which I love, Google Authenticator.
Yes.
So it makes it very easy for me to add, I'll add another layer of authentication. It's not as trivial.
Now, if the world had evolved a little differently and you were already using Squirrel for other sites and Evernote added Squirrel, then it'd be like, oh, look,
yeah, there'd be some incentive.
Yeah. So anyway, my role here is we'll get a spec out. We'll create a bunch of apps. I mean, I want to get back to SpinRite as soon as I can, But, you know, this exists, and we just need to nail it down, make it real, and then see what happens. I mean, it's a proposed alternative for authentication. What I can say is our listeners all got it. I mean, it was phenomenal. Oh, yeah. what the reaction was.
Well, but they know you and they trust you, and that we have to get the greater world to do the same.
Well, it may take a while, which is fine. You know, my app will exist. Other apps on other platforms will exist. Mobile platform apps will exist. There it will be. And then it will be users beginning to bug websites.
Right.
To you, I want to be able to authenticate with Squirrel. Go support it. And people will be creating all of the website.
Should be very easy for sites to do. So that's one of the advantages Facebook Connect has. It's just a line of code, or Google Connect. It's a line of code. It was very easy for me and others to, you know, even without a big IT department or programmers, to just add that support. And when both Google Plus and Facebook added this, uptake was very quick, almost universal. But so I would love to see that. I mean, it would be just great to see, I think. But Facebook is never going to do it, and Google's never going to do it, because they want to collect information. And this is a separate, you know, this kind of deals them out of the loop, potentially.
Well, they did Authenticator, and there's no information being collected there.
And I believe at least Google, maybe not Facebook.
Google is actively looking at this. I mean, they're working closely with Yubico and Stina and the YubiKey.
Oh,
they've got pilot projects and things. And in fact, they did play with QR code login briefly a couple years ago. For about a month, there was something where you could they would present you with a QR code.
Right.
You could snap it, and the login sort of jumped over to your phone. It took it away from the website to your phone, and it's funny too, because I've been flooded with people saying, "Oh, Gibson, this has been done before," and then they'll send me a link to something which has a QR code, but that's the only thing it bears in common.
This is unique, as far as I can tell. There's nothing like this. Yeah,
I do have a page of all of that other stuff that people are finding, just so it has a place to live, so I can say, "Yeah, we've seen all of that, and none of it is the same."
Right.
There's even been some people saying, you know, like showing me patents, and if you look at the diagram on the patent, it's got 26 different things all pointing at each other, and it's like, okay, look at my picture and look at their picture. There's no comparison.
All right. So thank you. And I apologize for everybody who's already heard all this. Let us get to our – actually, before we do, I want to do an ad, and then we're going to get to the security news. It's second Tuesday. Once again, yesterday.
Yes,
we'll
it is.
Get the details on that. I want to hear the Lava Bit story about Ladar Levinson. And, and of course, your questions and Steve's answers. A jam-packed episode of Security Now. I should not have slowed us down. I apologize. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix. They do such great work. And GoToAssist is, for the IT professional, kind of heaven on earth. It's three really great cloud-based tools that will let you really take control of your IT world. It's tough, to be honest. We know this. If you're supporting people, whether it's software or hardware, your users want issues to be solved fast. Every minute counts. The worst thing in the world, though, is to have a variety of different tools. They all are different. You don't know how to use them, or you have to learn how to use them. It's just too complicated. That's why I really like and use GoToAssist from Citrix. Everything you need, three essential tools. Of course, you can customize it completely, but the basic tools are the GoToAssist service desk. Of course, it all starts with that trouble ticket, so you can track incidents and resolutions. You can also track changes and things. It's a very powerful service desk. The GoToAssist monitoring, I've talked a lot about that in the past, lets you proactively monitor your client's network, all the hardware and software, so you could fix problems before they become big issues. Of course, their core product that they're famous for, have been for 10 years, their remote support, which gives you live or unattended support to any PC, Mac, or mobile device from anywhere. So you resolve issues quickly and effectively. It's one of those things where it's so powerful, so cool. There's so much you can do with it. I think the best thing to do is try it. So we've arranged 30 days free. Citrix is great about that. Just visit GoToAssist.com. Promo code is simple. It's security. I would ask you to, you don't have to use that, but I would ask you to, because that way Steve will get credit. GoToAssist. If you're in IT, you got to try this. A really great tool. I used it with my mom just the other day, as a matter of fact. GoToAssist.com. Yes, it's good for that, too. GoToAssist.com. Offer code is security. Please use that, and you'll get 30 days absolutely free. Steve Gibson, Leo Laporte. Before we get to questions and answers, let's get some security news.
Well, we are, as you mentioned, we've just passed the second Tuesday of the month. This is one of those earliest Tuesdays it could be because the first Tuesday of the month was the first of the month. This being, So yesterday was the 8th and today's the 9th. So we have 8 patches from Microsoft for their October surprise.
I like that. The October surprise. I like that.
Repairing 26 unique identified vulnerabilities. Of these 26, 17 were remote code execution, 6 were elevation of privilege, 2 were denial of service, and 1 was information disclosure. Microsoft is beginning now to prioritize these for administrators because they recognize there is friction on the part of IT companies or IT organizations in large companies because there have been mistakes made before. So Microsoft says immediately patch numbers 80, 81, and 83. Then you should also do 82, 84, 85, and 86.
Oh, my gosh.
And the least important is 87.
Yeah. Well, so, of course, as always.
So we had Internet Explorer that had 9 privately reported execution vulnerabilities. That's obviously
9.
10 memory corruption vulnerabilities when parsing specially crafted web pages. And this is the update that fixes that active exploit that was being patched in the wild where there was a fix-it that I tweeted a couple weeks ago and recommended the way I said it, if you know, for anyone who must use Internet Explorer, if you're using it, you probably ought to apply this fix-it because there's no patch yet. So this was patched in this month's Patch Tuesday. So do that. Also, there was a kernel mode driver problem in font parsing, causing memory corruption and a use after free vulnerability. 7 privately reported vulnerabilities there. 2 remote code execution and 5 were elevation of privilege. Problems in the .NET framework, problems back in the old Common Control Library, the old COMCTL32.dll, a problem was found. Also in SharePoint Server, Excel, Word, and Silverlight. So it's a grab bag, you know, one of these big months, and definitely worth updating your Windows, especially because we've got 17 remote code execution vulnerabilities in IE. Oh, and several of them are being exploited in the wild now. So, you know, that puts an edge on the need to update.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
Now, I tweeted, this hit the news of days ago, and the New Yorker did a really nice 4-page piece summarizing what our friend Ladar Levinson went through with the shutdown of LavaBit. As our listeners will well remember, he was gagged and unable to say anything about what had actually happened. And so there was that frustration that he couldn't even tell us. And what he posted on his site when he shut down his pseudo-secure email service was that he could not in good conscience keep it open lest he be committing a crime against the people of all of his customers who were using his service. So he chose to shut it down. He was threatened by law enforcement for the act of shutting it down, which that was a little galling. So I'm not going to read this piece. It's long, but I did tweet it recently, and I recommend it. In fact, I gave it a bit.ly shortcut, bit.ly/grc-lb, all lowercase, as in lava bit. So grc-lb will take you to this nice New Yorker piece. But here's, in summary, what we learned. They did demand that he turn over his SSL certificate.
As you had speculated. They wanted him to stay in business, to be basically fully compromised, and have no one know it.
Yes.
So his decision was, look, either I continue to run, and every single person who has an account on my site will be open to the feds, an open book, or I just shut down. And he had no choice.
Yep.
And he couldn't talk about it.
Yeah, so he was gagged. First, he said, look, I can't hand over the master keys. Basically, it's the master keys to his business is the way to think about this.
He didn't do that. He didn't give them.
Well, not initially.
He kind of had to, right?
He said, for $3,500, you paying me just for my time, I will write the code you want to give you the access to the individual whose account you want to monitor. Okay. I will provide you with that access.
Wow. All right.
They said, no, we want everything. And he said, I can't give you anything. The judge then sanctioned him $1,000 a day.
Oh, my God.
Until he complied with the court order to turn over the keys.
And he can't tell. Can he get a lawyer?
No, he had a lawyer working with him. And his lawyer, of course, was bound by attorney-client privilege not to disclose. So, yeah,
nobody could say anything about this.
Nothing could be said publicly.
This is happening completely in secret.
Yes. So the only way we know all this, is a court did release some of this information. There was a court order to release some documentation. Yeah, we got some information.
He, in his farewell, said, I can't tell you. I've tried, I think he said, three times to get permission to tell you what's been going on, but I can't. Well, apparently he did subsequently get some permission.
Well, so, yes, and that was just recently that he was able to get some permission.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm glad I paid for 10 years of LavaBit right before he closed down, because that's gone towards his legal defense. He deserves some help on this.
What he finally did, because he had this thousand, I mean, he's not a rich person. He was doing all right. But he printed out in text in 4-point type, and it took 11 pages, his certificate key cryptography.
Here. You want it? Here.
He gave it to them. And they were not happy.
No.
They complained that this was
we can't read this.
nearly illegible. It, in 4-point type, it could not be OCR scanned.
No.
Someone would have to manually type in 11 pages of
perfect.
Incredibly tiny hex characters.
That's like paying your taxes in pennies, basically.
And one single mistake made anywhere would render it completely useless. And his attorney said, well, there it is.
There you go.
You wanted it. And so then they upped it to $5,000 a day. And held him in contempt of court, upped it to $5,000 a day, and a couple days later he shut down LavaBit because he said I can't do this. In fact,
did that get him off the hook? I mean,
I think he gave them the keys and unplugged the servers and wiped.
You can have the keys, but I'm going to take the car.
Precisely. It was here are the keys. Sorry, there's nothing for you to plug them into any longer. No more traffic will be encrypted using those keys. And that was the story.
I hope he can get away with this. I mean, I hope that this doesn't cost him. Are they still prosecuting him, or they're just unhappy?
They're not happy.
That's fine. I don't want them to be happy. They should be miserable.
Yep.
But I want him to not have to pay $5,000 a day or go to jail.
So in this story, he says. It was the government's insistence on collecting the SSL keys that most deeply disturbed Levison and led to the shutdown of LavaBit. He believes that not only would the FBI have had unfettered secret access to the communications of his 400,000 customers without being required to give Levison a log of what it accessed, but putting his encryption keys in the hands of the government would have opened LavaBit to a more profound exploitation of his services communications. Levison worried that if he turned the keys over to the FBI, the NSA would have been able to obtain them without his knowledge through a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court order, We know now that the NSA has been systematically cracking encryption across the web, and it has built a database of encryption keys that automatically decode messages. This is dangerous, Leveson said, because it allows the NSA to read encrypted communications as they flow past the company, past the agency's taps of the broader internet infrastructure by simply observing them, leaving no trace of the surveillance, unlike traditional man-in-the-middle attacks. This vulnerability, he insists, is not sufficiently understood. And while the Times' initial reporting indicates that the NSA's method of obtaining the keys for its database is shrouded in secrecy, Leveson suggests that his case also illustrates one of the ways in which it collects them, by secretly compelling companies to turn them over.
Now, presumably, they've done this to other companies, other people who haven't had the integrity to step forward as Ladar did and say, I'm not doing it.
Well, and who also have shareholders. As was observed when this occurred, Ladar was able to say no and give them the finger because it's just him. I mean, he was able to make the decision unilaterally to give up 10 years of his life building this service because of his own integrity. But no CIO or CTO or COO or CEO could do that. They'd just be fired by the board.
Now, companies like Facebook and Google have said, well, I don't know if they've categorically denied this particular thing. Have they?
Well, remember that email companies don't have a problem because email is almost never encrypted.
Right.
And so as my original hypothesis is that Prism could simply tap upstream of Google.
We know they're doing that, by the way. That thank you, Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein, inadvertently last week said that they were doing that. In public testimony in the Congress and Senate.
Yep.
So thank you, Dianne, for letting us know. She's of course on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yep.
Confirming what you've said all along. In fact, Steve, you have been right about this all along. This is exactly what you presumed was happening with Ladar Leveson.
Because ultimately, it's all driven by technology.
Yeah.
That, as I have said, it's the politicians are scratching their head trying to figure out what to do. There will be somewhere there is policy. Ultimately, it's about bits and math. And so, we understand bits and math here.
Yeah.
And so we can say this is what's probably ultimately happening at where the hardware meets the software and the data passes through it. This is what's going on.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wowie zowie.
But it's, the ultimate takeaway is we now know that companies have been, we know of one specifically, have been asked by the federal government to divulge their SSL keys and have had to decide what to do. Ladar said no. Major companies cannot say no. So maybe if you parse the exact terminology of the CEOs of these major firms, they don't consider giving their keys up, working with the federal government. I don't know how you parse that, but it is certainly what the NSA wants.
It just makes me weep.
It's really, I remember when I read this the first time, I was a little queasy. It's like, oh, crap.
Well, we should just assume this happened and that the NSA now has all, there is no secure SSL traffic. This doesn't mean that PGP is not safe. And really, this is why the only really safe way to do email is using PGP or GPG or some form thereof.
So while we're on the topic, I will take this a little bit out of sequence.
By the way, on the Evernote authentication, that is now available to all Evernote users. It was premium users only. That's why I thought.
Ah.
So I'm a premium. Of course, I pay for Evernote. And so I've had it for a while. But everybody
and what I remember reading was
two-factor authentication.
Free users now had this.
Yes.
But paid users also have something else. There was some other level of or type of authentication.
Well, I must check.
wasn't free, I think, for Evernote to offer, whereas authentication, you know, the Google authentication style, as we know, is just two-party and is free.
Evernote's just fabulous. They've just added the ability to edit PDFs in Evernote. I mean, it's just a great tool. I put it on every single device I have. And that's a lot of devices.
I have a sci-fi alert.
Okay.
I know nothing about this, but tonight... And for those who don't listen until tomorrow or Friday, also re-airing Friday night is the premiere of a new series called The Tomorrow People. It has an 8 out of 10 ranking on IMDb. The short description is the story of several young people from around the world who represent the next stage in human evolution, possessing special powers, including the ability to teleport and communicate with each other telepathically. Together, they work to defeat the forces of evil.
That sounds like Heroes.
Heroes mixed with Jumpers, mixed with, you know, a couple things. Anyway, I don't know what it is. Greg Berlanti is one of the main guys behind it, and he brought us Everwood and Brothers and Sisters and Dawson's Creek. So take that for what it's worth. I liked Everwood and Brothers and Sisters, a lot, actually. This is on the CW, so maybe it's going to be bubblegum. I don't know. I'm just saying it's there. So for anybody who's interested, maybe we'll have something. It was based on a much older British series by the same name, The Tomorrow People. I think it was back in the 70s, like really old. And so we'll see. Maybe they updated it and will give us something good. My recorder will be recording it, and so we'll know. Speaking of the NSA, I got a bunch of tweets from people because I have several times talked about how much I like the series The Good Wife. And remember, Leo, that many people were recommending it and I was saying, what? You know, I'm not watching something called The Good Wife. That just doesn't seem like my kind of thing. Well, I love it. But even if anyone has never seen an episode, go find Last Sunday Nights. It was Sunday, October 6th. The whole thing, well, okay, three quarters, was the NSA listening in on conversations. It was a really funny. They're just having a huge amount of fun with this, with, you know, two geeky 20-somethings, each with these big workstations and data streaming in and eavesdropping and networking people. And, oh, now they got permission to go from two stages removed to three and so forth. Anyway, I got a bunch of people brought it to my attention even before I had seen it because it was sucked in by my DVR, but I watched it yet. Anyway, it was really fun. So if you're at all curious, you want to see a show, the first one that I've seen really, you know, having fun at the NSA's expense about all of this kind of eavesdropping, The Good Wife, Sunday, October 6th episode.
Great.
It was great. Now, I was also trying to save any mention of this specifically until you got back, but we had a light news week last week, and so I thought, well, okay. And that is that Jenny just had a book published.
Oh.
I knew you'd get a kick out of it.
Congratulations. That's great.
It's a children's book titled, Is God Real or Pretend?
I love it.
It's,
and what's the answer, by the way? I'd be curious.
It's comparative religion for kids. She has a character, Benjamin, and he's got a dog because Jenny's a big dog person, who has a like a his grandmother, Dr. Wendy Knowles, I think, who he talks to about this. She's a professor of astronomy, And he goes to somebody else. Anyway, he ends up meeting through the – it's not long. I think it's 66 pages. Meeting the major leaders of the world's five biggest top religions, Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Christian, and Muslim. Mm-hmm. And they explain their religions to Benjamin.
Oh, that's neat.
Oh, it's – and the
point is – So it's kind of open-minded. It's not saying yes or no.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And apparently our listeners love it. They've been buying the book.
Oh, that's great.
They've been multiple copies.
Is it on Amazon? Where can I get it?
It's on Amazon. And in fact, I wanted to ask our listeners, if you did buy it and liked it, of course, we all care about people's opinions. And so if you could take a moment to go back and add a review to her site or for the book, that would be great.
Is God and, real or pretend?
Pretend. I just love the title. I just, you know, it just, I got a kick out of it. And then Jenny said, you didn't tell them that you designed the cover. It's like, okay, well, that's really not relevant.
You
that's
did
not
the
really...
cover? Wait well, a minute.
The concept. An artist did the cover, it's but I came good. Up with the idea.
It's a kid you know looking that through a telescope at the the world.
Remember the picture, that painting in the Sistine Chapel where there's a human sort of out with an outreached hand and yeah. God is reaching down and they're sort of touching fingers.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what's in the up in the moon or whatever he's looking at is sort of that interaction.
Oh, it is. It's the Sistine ceiling. I just noticed that.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
So anyway, that was my idea.
It is in paperback, $13.45, available from Amazon right now. By Jennifer Horsman, Horsman, illustrated by Julie Lyman Weaver. Is God real or pretend?
And Jenny also said, she said, Steve, there's also been a spike in my other books. Jenny had
a prior
life.
I know she wrote
life.
Books.
Oh, she was a best-selling author.
What?
She was doing romance novels.
Oh,
like,
forever in a lifetime. Holy moly. Did you do the cover on this?
No, they're five-star. They're like... When she and I got back together, she sort of mentioned that, and I said,
"That's
what?
You."
No, she had Fabio on the cover.
It
of
looks
one
like
of them.
Fabio. I mean, like, it does.
No, it was.
It is
they
Fabio.
Had, she had the Fabio was on the cover of one.
That's funny.
Anyway, apparently there's been a spike in the sale of those.
Sure.
Which are now they're out of print, but they are available for on Kindle also.
She also wrote the Vegetarian Weight Loss Plan.
She did.
But A Kiss in the Night, Magic Embrace, The Ice Queen, A Christmas Romance, Passion's Joy. Wow. And Please Don't Eat the Animals.
And
Virgin and, Star, Awaken My Fire, Passion Flower. Holy moly.
But apparently they're good. I have not read any of them. But when I was curious,
you know,
so I went.
Just and, a word of advice, man to man, don't read them. Because if you do, then you have to give an opinion.
Yeah, well, other people have, and they're like breathless. Like, this is the best. You know, when
really?
Are you going to write more? I mean,
really?
No, people are just going nuts over her romance novels. So
sweet.
I said, well, yeah.
And she's all yours. Well, are you a lucky guy or what? Does she wear bodices?
What?
Nothing. Moving on. Let's take a break, and we're going to do questions and answers. What do you say, Mr. G?
I think it's time.
All right. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. You know, when you're traveling, as I was, around the world, it's a matter of concern, you know, with a laptop that you might lose it. And the problem, of course, is I didn't have good internet access, so... I'm paranoid. I brought two extra external drives, packed one in my carry-on, one in my checked luggage. I mean, I had four or five copies of every photo. It made me really appreciate Carbonite. When you have Carbonite Online Backup, anytime you're connected to the internet, man, your stuff is being backed up automatically without you thinking about it instantly, so you don't have to, you know, worry if there's a change. It is so important. It's if you don't back up, your computer files at home, your computer files at work, you are really running a huge risk. With Carbonite, all of your computers, all your servers, if you're a business, or your external hard drives are backed up to the cloud automatically. You can access those files wherever you go with a free Carbonite app. I love that. Or just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer. So your stuff's always available. You know, we should get Carbonite to use Squirrel. That would make it really easy. You go to a library, you just there's your stuff. And no matter how many computers you have, no matter where they're located, Carbonite has an affordable flat rate plan for you. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. You just need Security Now. That's the one word. That's the offer code, Security Now. You'll get two free bonus months when you decide to buy. They say if, but I'm going to say when you decide to buy. Carbonite.com. Please use the offer code Security Now and have true peace of mind. I did get my pictures home safe and sound, but and Carbonite backed up a lot. But the problem is, you know, I took 2,000, 3,000 pictures, and the internet
and what was
on the ship is like this.
I was just going
to
ask.
Well, yeah. So what we would do frequently is go ashore to a coffee shop or whatever to get on the internet. But we did buy the internet on the boat. But this is true on all cruise ships, all boats. They use marine satellites, Inmarsat in this case, and it's probably for a boat with 450 people on it. It's probably a megabit, right, or megabit and a half.
Oh,
so there's a lot of latency because it's satellite internet, and it's divided among a lot of people. So you would get up early in the morning, or you'd stay up really late at night, and it'd be fine. It'd be usable. Not super fast. You wouldn't want to Skype on it, but during the daytime when everybody's on it, forget it. So yeah, basically, that's one of the selling points of a cruise. I can't get online. So don't send me email. Don't try to reach me. I'm sorry. I can't help you.
It's not your fault, Leo.
Not my fault.
We know if you could, you would.
I'm on a boat.
You would never abandon your fans.
All right. Let's go. We got questions. You got answers, right?
Yep.
Yep. Yip-a-dee-dee-do-do. These probably have a lot to do with squirrel.
They all do.
I'm guessing.
In fact, we can skip the first one because he was just asking. He says he loves the squirrel idea, but he doesn't have a smartphone. So we've covered that. You will be able to use desktop clients. And the other advantage of the desktop client, because people have asked about browser plugins to do squirrel.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, browser plugins are kind of scary because they're in the browser and you wonder about the browser security.
Anytime it's a binary ball, you got to worry about it.
Well, and the beauty of this is, since we'll register the SQRL:// scheme, then you install one client, and then all of the different browsers in your machine get to share it.
Ah.
So you have the advantage of it being outside the browser separately. You know, if you have Windows, written probably by me, and in assembler and signed and done. In other platforms for Windows and Wine, and I'm sure people will do one for Mac too. So, but the advantage is, then it's cross browser and everybody gets to share that one.
Cool. All right. Well, then we'll go to, credit, by the way. Actually, that wasn't any one person. Many users, it says.
It was many users, yeah. Yes.
So we'll go to Ho Jun Kim with a question about usability. Heard you talk about Squirrel. While my interest is piqued, I do have a question about its usability. If the master key is heavily encrypted on the device, wouldn't the users have to decrypt the master key every time they want to authenticate? If this is so, Squirrel would never be as usable as you describe it. The user experience wouldn't be just, scan a QR code and be done with it. It would be scan a QR code, type an ultra-strong password on the phone. Pain in the butt, right? Only then would they be logged in. So no smoother than using KeePass or LastPass on mobile. Have you thought of this? Thanks. Of course you have. Of course you have. What's your answer?
Okay, of course. And you and I haven't, in our start of this, discussed the question of passwords. That's the other note. If you think about it, nowhere in what you and I talked about for the first half hour did I mention passwords.
Right.
Because the system doesn't need a password.
Ah.
That is, the security of the Squirrel system itself is perfect just using public key crypto. No password. But the security of your phone, we know, is not perfect. And so what we need is a way of having the Squirrel app in your phone authenticate you.
Right.
It has no problem authenticating itself to all the websites in the world. But, and people are very casual with their phones. It's like, hey, can I borrow your phone for a second? You hand them to people. Parents' kids play with their parents' phones. And so we need to lock access to the app itself in a way which is strong, however strong the user wants. So, they could define a weak password if they chose to for their phone and understand the consequences of using a weak password.
So what you're basically saying is you secure the phone And then the app is on the phone. And so that's your choice, is how you secure the phone. And if you've got an iPhone 5, for instance, you're in luck because you could use the fingerprint scanner. And that's pretty good.
Very easy. Right. And you said pretty good. Is it good enough? Maybe it's good enough. I mean, it's really up to the user how much, how complex a password they want to use. No matter what your password complexity, we use a password-based key derivation function, PBKDF. We use a memory hard one, Scrypt, so that it is immune to acceleration by GPUs and FPGA arrays, so that when you enter your password, it has to think about it for 1 second. That's, not long. But the beauty of that is it is an algorithm to decrypt your password that cannot be sped up, that takes 1 second per guess. So even if a bad guy breached your phone security and got the contents of your phone, your master key would be encrypted by a technology that resists acceleration so that they would be limited to one guess per second. Now, unfortunately, if you used, Hi Mom or Monkey or something as your password, well, it's going to be on a password list, and it may still not take them that many seconds, even at one guess per second. So you'd still want to use a good password. But so we're solving the problem as much as we can. It's up to the user to decide, like, based on their environment. If it's a school teacher and she hands her phone around to those kids in her classroom every day, well, that's a very insecure use of her phone. If you're in a bunker, in some way that your phone never have to worry about your phone being compromised, then you could back off on how strong you want your particular squirrel password to be. So
if I put it on an iPhone, like this is the iPhone 5S, I currently have it so that when I put my fingerprint on it, it unlocks it. But you could add a long password to that. I guess there's no app, so we don't know yet, but you could, in theory, as LastPass does, add an additional password to unlock the Squirrel app, right?
Well, yes, and that's exactly the idea is, and so we've had a couple different ideas.
Because I keep my password in LastPass so I don't have to re-enter it every time. But I put a PIN in LastPass. So you'd have to unlock my phone, and you'd have to know my PIN on LastPass, and then you could get my passwords. And I consider that sufficient, but it isn't the only way to do it. You could make it much more secure if you wish.
The difference, remember that the difference here is we're using LastPass because we have given up. We're using LastPass as a database of all the different passwords we use. This, if this were adopted, ends that. You only have one password which to prove who you are to the app, and then it handles across the entire internet worth of authentication for you with that one password. So what's different here is one password is all you need. Now, what another thing we're considering that will probably be a feature of the app is when you first use it, for example, after unlocking it, you would have to enter your entire long secure password, which protects you against hackers getting your phone. That's its purpose. Because if someone's guessing on your keyboard, well, there'll be a 5-guess lockout.
Right.
Obviously, it's going to say sorry and wipe the key so that no one can access it. So the idea would be the first time you use it after unlocking it, you have to say, this is really me, and enter a long password. But then if you haven't used it for some length of time, or you've switched back to the app, or who knows what rules we could have, then you only have to enter the first 4 characters of your super long password in order to say, yes, it's still me who wants to authenticate now to the site. The point is, you're giving it a lot of power. It has the power to instantly log you in to every site where you are using it as your authentication. So that does need to be protected. And it's still the case that something you know is the best protection. Remember that the authorities can force you to put your thumb on your iPhone 5S unlock button. They cannot force you to give up password. That's considered testimony, self-incriminating testimony against yourself.
Yeah. I thought that was quite interesting. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Clay Cross with a tweet. He says, why does Squirrel use domain names to generate the private key? Wouldn't it be using a Squirrel ID be better, like using a hashtag versus a domain name, like a keyword, an AOL keyword? Somebody in the chat room asked the same question or similar question. What happens if a website changes its domain name? Doesn't this screw it up?
Right. And I think we actually had that question later on because that has come up. But that's a great question. The reason is that is the way the site identifies itself to the internet.
Right.
I mean, it's relying on DNS. We know, I mean, DNS security is something that a lot of attention has been given to. We've talked about DNS spoofing. I've got my whole DNS spoofability thing. Dan Kaminsky famously found that there was like a lack of entropy in the way that ports were being used in DNS servers. I mean, so DNS has a long, huge history of, like, we understand the security of it. It is generally extremely secure. So that's the thing that cannot be changed. If a website like made up an ID like for themselves, then some other evil website could use Amazon's ID, and you would be generating your authentication for Amazon and giving it to the evil website, which it could then use to log on to impersonate you to Amazon. So it is we bind the way to talk about this is that the user's identity presented to a website is bound tightly to that website's name. There's a one-to-one binding between the user's identity and the domain name, so that any change to it changes their identity. So that brings up the next problem, and we'll skip over that question when we come to it, because we've already asked it in the chat room, and that is, what if a site changes its name? Well, that's a problem.
Well, you just have to re-authenticate with a new site.
That's what you would have to
like
do.
Like if you change your name. I mean, you got
to. Yeah.
You
know. So normally, if a site wanted to change its domain name, it's because it's come up with a better one.
Right.
And so, first of all, notice that no one ever does. I mean, Amazon is never going to change. The huge reputation cost of changing that name. But typically, they could hold on to the old one and start using the new one preferentially. Now, in that case, if someone authenticated to their new domain, they would say, oh, we've never seen you before, because you would be unknown under that new domain name.
Right.
And so, but they would know they're in transition. And they would say, if you have an account with us, please scan this Squirrel code so we can link you. And so they would present the Squirrel code for the old domain. You'd scan it and they go, okay. And they just transfer your identity over. So all of these problems can be solved. I mean, there are problems created by the simplicity of this, but that's also what makes it so robust.
Yeah. I don't think these are not intractable problems. These are
No, they're not showstoppers. Completely no,
not at all. J.M. Witty on Twitter tweeted, for Squirrel, why not just add a server signing component to prevent evil site session? Let me say that again. Evil site session jacking. And it says, Steve, talk all about the anti-spoofing, anti-phishing work.
So a lot of time has been given to the question of phishing sites. Because, for example, you could go to evilsite.com and it could say, hi, you know, and present you with a Squirrel code saying, this is the code to log on. But it could be showing you the Squirrel code from Amazon. That is, when you went to their page, it could have gone to Amazon and pretended to want to log on. Amazon would have given it a log on page with a Squirrel code, which it in turn shows to you. So when you scan that code, it's actually, you're actually authenticating yourself to Amazon, but you're authenticating the login session that the evil site started. So we solve that problem by showing the user on the screen of their smartphone or on the user interface of their app, if they're using a desktop or a laptop, we show them you are about to authenticate to www.amazon.com, meaning you're about to provide your credentials for Amazon.com. Well, you'd say, wait a second, I'm at evilsite.com. I'm not giving evilsite.com my credentials. So we do need to show the user the domain name in the SQRL code, because it's a QR code. You know, people can't read those. Machines can read them. So we show that to confirm this is the site they think they're on that they intend to authenticate to, and then they move on. Now, the other possibility is that you're at Amazon.com. That is, it's the phishing case, right, where you believe you're at Amazon, but you're actually not. So there are two things that we're able to do. One of the other possibilities is, what we want to do to block phishing attacks is we want not to allow a phishing site or a man-in-the-middle site to acquire our credentials. Now, I'll note that going to Amazon.com or Amazon.cn or something, that presents you with a perfectly normal-looking Amazon.com page where you type in your username and password, you know, this is a standard phishing attack. So it would be nice if Squirrel had some way to defeat that, but it's sort of, it's like not our problem. I mean, it's like, well, okay, this is a problem with logging into a site that pretends to be something that it isn't. This is a problem we've always had. It turns out that we actually do get some leverage, though, because what we can do is what we want to prevent is this evil site session from being logged in so that it's logging in as us. Well, we can ask Amazon to return to the client a logon link. That is, a link to a logged on session rather than logging on the session that's displayed the Squirrel code. So essentially cutting the spoofing site out of the loop completely, cutting this phishing site out. We then click on the link in the app and it gives us a logged on Amazon page. And so it actually is complete protection against phishing for the first time. Anyway, this is all being written up on the site, so right. I know that I'm running it out quickly because I'm looking at the clock. We're not making much progress here.
I think this is also for some people difficult to understand, and so a lot of the questions that are coming up are questions that come from really mostly like I don't get it, as opposed I don't want to give them short shrift, but. Read more. Go to grc.com/SQRL. All will become clear.
Yep.
Grasshopper. Rich Baldry wonders about poor server implementations. He says, Squirrel's a great idea. Sounds pretty sound. And I like how you've already started to collate potential attacks or weaknesses to get everything out on the table. And by the way, I do want to say this, and I'm sure people know this, but I'll say it again. The whole point of this and going public with this is to have it be vetted.
Yes.
You're not saying, oh, this is the answer. It's done. You're saying, hey, look at this, security gurus, experts. Take a look. Bang on this. Let's find out what's wrong with it. So yep. Certainly not. You're not saying, hey, it's perfect. We want to find what's wrong with it.
It's if one there week is. Ago. It survived the weekend where some crypto guys looked at it before last week's podcast. It has survived the last week of. I mean, we're getting 12,000 hits a day on the SQRL page at GRC. So it's come to people's attention.
So as an example, Rich says, one weakness I don't think you've covered, a risk of a poor server-side implementation of a random number generator. As you've discussed often, you can trust the math, but the implementation may not be so good. I could see in extreme cases that could create QR code collisions, which could mess up the login process. Would it also allow an attacker to analyze the encrypted data sent by the client and potentially discover the private key of users? Would it even be a route for a malicious site with a specifically designed random number generator to attack the system? Also, why does the site-specific key need to be derived from a user's master key in the domain? This is kind of like that previous question. Why not just use another random value for that key? If there's no need for the site-specific identities to be related, why create this relation? Well, it is. That's the whole point.
Yes, and so I'll just finish that last point first. What Rich is sort of saying, and a number of people have asked this question in different ways, well, why not just make up a random key for every site you visit? And then the problem is you have a database of random keys that you are required to never lose or forget. Right. The beauty of this is everything derives from one master key. And I don't know if you picked up on this, but we have a way of exporting those from like out of phones into by using a QR code. So Leo, if you started to use it, you could have the phones face each other transfer the master
Here's
key
my master
from phone
keys.
To phone.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yes. And also print it out on paper so that you're able to physically back up your identity, put it in a safety deposit box, right. You know, put it somewhere safe so that if anything ever happened, if the phone got lost, well, you just install your master key into a replacement phone.
You know, this reminds me of Super GenPass, which I've used for years, which hashes the website URL with your master password and creates a unique password for every site you visit that can easily be recreated.
Yes. In fact, it's funny because I remembered you talking about this when I was like deep in the documentation. I thought, you know, I remember Leo talking about something. And I didn't remember what the name of it was.
I've used it for
did
years.
Use the, yep.
Yeah.
And so basically we're talking about that tied to where instead of a password. See, the problem with a password is a password does not have enough entropy. And we're coming to a question about that in a second, which is really interesting. But to answer Rich's question, random number generation on the server. Remember that there's a so-called nonce, an N-O-N-C-E, which is crypto speak for a number used once. Nonce stands for number once. Where the idea is there's a random value in this QR code, which is what we're signing and sending back to the server to prove that we have the private key that matches the public key that we have given the server as our identity. So the identity is our public key. The signature is our proof that we're the owners of the matching private key. So it turns out that the requirement for randomness is not very extreme. For example, say that a really, really bad server implementation never changed the nonce. It used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, okay? So the risk is a replay attack because every time we signed that, the signature would be the same. So even though we're using SSL to send that back to the server, you know, an employee could capture it. Someone maybe could hack somehow, like, you know, an SSL proxy, man-in-the-middle attack of some sort. I mean, again, it's my point is that the only danger is of a replay. So it behooves the server to change that every time. But in the spec we're working on, and it's called implementation details, and there's a lot of it already there on the website that wasn't there last week. We, the client, add our own nonce as well, specifically to protect against this case. So if a poor server or even a completely broken server were giving us the same squirrel code every time, we're appending our own nonce, which will not repeat, in order to guarantee that the signature we're sending is different every time. So we've solved that.
In other words, the doesn't have to be that robust. The requirements
correct.
That's that necessary.
It actually isn't. There's not a huge problem. If it just used an incrementing counter, it just has to be different.
Yeah.
Predictability is not a problem. It just has to not be the same thing we signed before, or an older signature could be used as a current signature. By using a counter, that's prevented.
Prevents replay attacks. Daniel Tickle, nicely named, muses about Squirrel and augmented reality. We'll do that in just a moment. First, I want to talk a little bit about our great advertiser. You've talked about it before, ProXPN. It's an implementation of something Steve's recommended many times, OpenVPN. Now, you can implement your own OpenVPN server. Non-trivial. You got to be a Steve Gibson level guy to do that.
I did. It was not easy.
It was not. Even Steve didn't have any fun doing it. But this is a great solution for anybody who wants to use VPN. More than ever, I think it's pretty clear our online freedom and privacy are threatened, not only by commercial entities like internet service providers and social media companies, but by the government keeping a record of everything you do. Plus that free Wi-Fi, you know, you use at the coffee house, the hotel, the airport, putting you at risk too because you're just sending your passwords and other secret stuff right through the air, just floating through the air. The nice thing about a VPN, that's really where VPNs began. You'd be at a coffee house, open Wi-Fi access spot. You'd use a VPN to create an encrypted tunnel around your data, all the data coming off of your laptop, going out. It would then go to the VPN server and then enter the public internet, and that protects you against any snoops in the area. Companies used VPNs, of course, to allow employees to log on to the corporate network as if they were there. So it's been around a long time. It's a well thought out, very secure system. ProXPN acts as that endpoint, you know, so that you can get complete online privacy. It uses a 512-bit encrypted tunnel, 2048 bits for the key. It can use OpenVPN or PPTP. Now, normally we don't recommend PPTP, but there are some devices that can't do OpenVPN. For them, at least you have a choice. Although I'm pleased to say there's now an Android, a ProXPN Android app that means you'll be using OpenVPN on Android, which is really great. So if you're worried about your ISP snooping on what you're doing with the six strikes rule, or you're getting internet filtering blocking what you can do, maybe geographic restrictions on sites you can visit, you got to try it. ProXPN.com. They have servers all over the world. That means when you use ProXPN, you emerge onto the internet from your location of choice. Dallas, Seattle, London, Singapore, Los Angeles, New York, Amsterdam. You pick it. They have clients which give you even more capability for Windows and Mac, as well as this new Android app, which is awesome. It also works with your iOS devices. World-class customer support, too. I want you to check it out. Visit proxpn.com/twit. That's our special landing page. And when you sign up, if you use the offer code SN20, you'll get 20% off, not for the first day, the first week, or the first month, but for the life of that account forever. That brings the total costs down to as low as $5 a month when you get that yearly plan. For this kind of protection, that's great. And of course, if you're not satisfied, you can cancel any time within the first 7 days for a full refund. ProXPN.com/twit. Go there, learn about it, read more, then sign up. Use the offer code SN20 to save 20%. ProXPN.com. All right, Steve, our next question comes from Mr. Tickle. I hope he's somebody's boss, and that the person says, yes, I have to ask Mr. Tickle if I can do this. Steve, I wonder, he's got to be British, right? I wonder if you would have considered implications of this squirrel with rapidly advancing augmented reality technology. Oh, maybe Daniel Tickle is his second life handle. Mine is, you know what mine is? Prune face spatula. I'm not kidding. I wish I were. While phones and tablets and such will be very handy with upcoming devices like Google Glass and Meta, spaceglasses.com, This would be a perfect method of authenticating when dealing with such a hands-off technology. Oh, I like this. You look at a web page, you look at a QR code, now you're logged in. You don't even have to pull out the phone. You just look. I'm here. It's a wonderful idea. I hope Squirrel gets the attention it needs and deserves. Had you thought about that? That's great.
I just thought that was a cool idea.
Makes
you're right.
Sense.
Yeah.
I could see people doing that. Kenan Dyer wonders about master password 1 minute unnecessary. I don't know what that means. Let's read. Why, he says, is it necessary to have offline verification of proper decryption of the master QR code to get your master secret? In my mind, silently failing, that is generating a real but not your master code, is a much better option. The only way to verify that the key was properly imported in this case is to try to log into a website that has your credentials. If it fails, well, that's not it. This makes it an online attack. It also makes having your QR master code no better than a random guessing. It also makes having your QR master code no better than random guessing master codes to someone without your password. You're going to have to figure out what that means. I have no idea what he's talking about.
Oh, fortunately I do. So what we decided was that if you export this super secret master key in any fashion out of the app, it needs to be deeply encrypted because bad guys could get it.
Right. That's a weakness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that we use this PBKDF function with S-Crypt, where we require a second of authentication that is processing, essentially decrypting, a second of decryption when you type it into your phone to encrypt and then decrypt an exported version is 60 seconds.
Oh, that slow down. I get it.
Yes.
I get it.
Anytime that code is outside of your phone, if you've printed it out, that it will require 60 seconds of constant crunching per guess for a single password entry to be decrypted and then turned into your code.
That really effectively prevents brute forcing.
It completely does.
Yeah.
It makes it absolutely impractical.
Yeah.
So, and there's no way around it. But part of what is exported is a check to see if you've entered the right password. So what this questioner is asking is, well, the check is what allows it to be brute forced, even though it takes a minute. He says, and he's saying, why even bother with that? Why take a minute? Why not just use whatever password the user puts in? Technically, you could. That is, the password is mixed with the secret key, and that generates the proper identity. But from a usability standpoint, in terms of like regular moms and dads using this thing, they would enter a password, and if they made a mistake in entering it, if there wasn't the ability to check the password, then it would say, okay, fine. But then the site wouldn't know who they were.
It just wouldn't work. Or it'd think you're somebody else.
You would be someone else. And so we decided we have to verify the password for usability. But an option when you export the password is not to include the verifier. Then it's on you. If you're someone who you don't want the verifier in there, it's like, okay, that's fine, but you better enter it right or it's not going to work. Now, there's one problem is there's another way to verify. Kenan was saying that it had to be an online attack. It turns out that's not the case. If you got any authentication for a user, their use of Squirrel on any website, then you've got that site's domain name and you've got their identifier, their public key for that site. That's all you need to run an attack, trying every possible password to see if for that domain you get the proper public key. So there is an offline brute forcing attack that does not require you to actually use the internet except just once to capture one authentication for one website. So we've come to the conclusion that the right thing to do is just deeply encrypt this so that it takes 60 seconds to decrypt it and let the user know, whoops, sorry, that was the wrong password. We'll tell you a minute from now. And then, try again. I think we found the right set of interactive, trade-offs.
Sounds good. You've obviously thought about this a lot.
That's all I've been doing, Leo.
Murray McEwen wonders about online forum user culpability and the anonymous poster. To wit, if this squirrel makes personal identification unnecessary, would this have the effect of increasing slanderous and hostile postings by anonymous users who feel they are safely hidden? I don't even want to go on. I would think that a scrupulous forum manager would still want traceability of users who post on his forum, and this means some sort of account setup of the forum posters would be required. Yes, that's right. Also, hey, can Squirrel help defeat spam bots and spammers who want to sign up on forums?
So, this has actually come up a lot.
No, it's good to answer the question. I agree.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious. It has come up a lot. But okay.
Well, the idea is that I promoted it last week and even in the teasing weeks before as anonymous. I mean, it is.
Well, it allows anonymity, but it's not a requisite. I mean.
Correct. So, for example, it's a token that never changes that represents a user. A forum could require nothing but it, or they could still require an email address loop confirmation, or more probable, a CAPTCHA. I mean, you might still require a CAPTCHA, or you might use a CAPTCHA just once per ID, per squirrel ID. And as long as it's not abused, as long as there are not too many incoming posts, then you would not require a CAPTCHA every time. What this does is it provides a secure assertion of who you are to a website. What they choose to do with it
exactly
is up to them.
That doesn't change any of the stuff that a website would normally
right.
do. It could or doesn't have to. Just right. as Facebook Connect, same thing. I mean, this is all, yeah, this is not new stuff. Now, I do find the spam question interesting. Is it possible, it would be, wouldn't it, to robotically generate these logins?
So, yes, it does nothing to defeat spam or spammers. You could just invent keys and right. just come in as a billion different individual people.
In fact, that might be a little bit of an argument against it, because it would, in fact, make it easier to automate mass logins. You could log in to a site thousands and thousands of times. A site would still have to implement some sort of anti-spam technology.
Well, yeah, and remember that the first thing that's going to happen is it's going to say, I don't know you. And so you then say, oh, crap, so you need to know me before I can post something.
Right.
And the site
But that's
says,
up
yeah.
to the site to do.
Correct.
Obviously, yeah.
So right now, if a site had no login requirement, spam bots could go crazy.
Anyway, right.
Yeah.
It just means exactly. it could happen. They can go crazy faster.
Actually, it doesn't change the speed
no,
of crazy.
No, they're still pretty fast, yeah.
They can go just as fast as they want.
The speed of crazy.
We already answered.
What is
we
the speed of crazy after all?
We answered number 9 already.
Changing domains. Okay, so let's go to number 10. John in Illinois, he wonders about not saving the key. What if the squirrel password on the phone was used to generate the key each time so that there would be no key for an attacker to get? Multiple people could use the same squirrel app under the same device, but have different squirrel passwords every time. Also, every password entered would generate a QR code. The attacker would not get a failure message and would have to try each QR code on the website. Is this a good addition to your excellent idea? What say
so,
you?
Okay. So, to paraphrase that, John is suggesting that the password that the user chooses is their identity for a given site. So I choose a password that is hashed with the domain name to create the key.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of interesting. If it was impossible for two people ever to use the same password.
Which, of course, is ridiculous.
And that's the problem.
As we know.
Now, we already know most people use Monkey, having followed your excellent example. And so...
Hey, so I use Monkey 123. Get it straight.
So we obviously need more entropy, because what we don't want is a collision. And as I mentioned at the top of this, the birthday attack is what this has been famously named, because there's only 365 birthdays possible. And I think it's, what is it? Is it 23 is the number?
It's a very low number.
Surprisingly low number.
But that's not – so it's not like if you say, hey, whose birthday is November 29th, that's not what we're talking about. Two people in the room having the same birthday, it'll need to only be around 23 people before it's almost certain that two of them will have the same birthday. But you don't get to say which birthday it is.
Yes, exactly.
That's kind of a critical thing to understand.
Yes, but that is this problem, because, for example, how many people would it take before – two of them might have the same password.
And it's a surprisingly low number.
Probably
it's not
five.
365. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay, so our question that we're posing is, we're using a pseudo-randomly generated master key. And in my proposal, in the case of the smartphone, we use entropy from the platform, from iOS or from Android. But I also have the person wave the phone around, and we stream... We stream data in from the camera.
Brilliant. Love this.
Yes.
Now, this is just a reference implementation. Others could do something different, right?
Yeah.
But this is a nice idea. I like it.
Because it absolutely frees you from the possible lack of entropy or NSA involvement in the pseudo-random number generator in the phone and generates the key. So yesterday, preparing for the podcast, I posed a question to my gang, fabulous group over in the news group. And I said, gang, would someone like to do some birthday collision math? What we really want to know is, for a given number of people, what is the statistical chance that any two of them have the same public key identity for any single website? Which would be an identity collision at, Amazon or Facebook or whatever, which is the same as any two having the same identity master key, since both are 256 bits. I said, as we know, assuming 2 to the power of 256 randomly distributed master key identities... Okay, so 2 to the 56, that's how many bits? There's 256 bits in the user's super secret, grandmaster key. Okay, well, that ends up being 116 times 10 to the 75.
And that's because the key is so long.
Well, because it's 256 bits.
Yeah, the birthday thing, there's only 365 chances, possibilities, 366 with leap year.
Right. So 2 to the 256 is equal to 116 times 10 to the 75.
That's good.
So that's, okay.
That's
one,
a big number.
1 and 70, or 116 and 75 zeros.
It's more people than have been alive in the lifetime of the world and then some.
Okay, so I said that many total possible public key identities.
Yeah.
I said, as I understand it, a rough estimate of the number of people required for there to be a 50% chance of collision is the square root of the size of the total key space.
That's right, yeah.
In our case, that's simple, since the square root of 2 to the 256 is 2 to the 128.
Yeah.
I said, so, in order for there to be a 50% chance of two people having the same identity master key, we would need to have 2 to the 128 users on a single website. So that's 340 times 10 to the 36 people all using this system on a single website, and then there'd be a 50% chance of a collision.
That's only a 50% chance.
I know. Exactly. I said, what I think would be very useful would be to see the collision probability calculation for the Earth's current population.
If all 7 billion people logged into the same website, what's the chance of a collision?
Yes.
Pretty low, I guess.
If everyone on Earth were using Squirrel, what would be the chance that any two would have the same identity master key? So one of our great contributors, Sam, posted, with a 2 to the 56 key size and 7 billion keys, he used the same population figure you just cited, the odds of a collision are 1 in 4.73 times 10 to the 57.
I don't even know.
The entire population of the Earth, 1 in 4.73 times 10 to the 57. I'm sure
that's sufficiently unlikely.
Chance of a huge asteroid
hitting
within the next 5 seconds.
Oh, much bigger. Yeah.
Than that.
I think we're safe.
So then
I love that.
Taylor jumped in and he said, somebody responded, how many people will have to sign up for there to be one collision? Just wondering from the perspective of a non-math genius. And Taylor, who's a very crypto-savvy person, said, for there to definitely be a collision, definitely, 2 to the 256 plus 1. Right?
Yeah.
Because you could have two.
They'd all have to sign up. Yeah.
All with a separate key. Yeah. And they
one extra guy puts you right over the top. Yeah.
Gotta be. Yep. Yeah. Now that's the guarantee. And so, and he cited a Wikipedia article called the pigeonhole principle.
Well, it just makes sense. That's how many possible choices there are. For 100% certainty, you'd have to have one more than the total number possible.
Now, not being satisfied.
In other words, you'd have to have 366 people in the room to guarantee a birthday collision.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But not being satisfied with that, he said, we will never, because Taylor is nothing if not thorough, we will never have to worry about that, though.
Why not?
Since you can't fit 2 to the 256 people within a light lifetime of each other.
What's a light lifetime?
Well, remember, this information cannot travel faster than the speed of light.
Right.
So information is the limiting factor when you have a huge ball of people.
Okay. There's just not enough bandwidth to do this.
Light can't get from one part of the diameter of the people ball to the other. So assumption number one, a person occupies 1 meter cubed, one cubic meter of space. Assumption number two, the speed of light is 299792458 meters per second.
Yes, we know this, yes.
Okay,
thanks to Michelson and Morley. Okay, go ahead.
So, just short of three, whatever it is.
1,000 kilometers per second, okay.
Yes, so 2 to the 256 people would then occupy 2 to the 256 cubic meters of space.
Yes, that's the people ball.
If you arrange them in a sphere, its diameter would be 3.
Which, by the way, is the most compact way to arrange them.
It's
not random. Yeah. That's huge. Sphere.
Big mother ball of people.
Yeah.
So that would be 3 times 10 to the 25 meter diameter.
Okay.
He says.
Gotcha so far.
It would take light. Let's see. He didn't put commas in here. So looks like 3,198,179,120 years
to cross the people ball.
Traverse from one side to the other.
Okay.
Even then, it wouldn't matter. He's really going to take this all the way.
Yeah.
Since the people in the center of the sphere would be undergoing a nuclear fusion reaction.
There's enough mass now to actually create a sun.
having their chemical components turned into heavier elements. This is why it's fun to be in the GRC news group.
Taylor, by the way, you got the job at Google. They're going to be on the phone to you right now. That's a good one. That's
he says, I don't think they will care about their squirrel ID.
Because they're now thorium.
Taylor is at diffuse.ca, if anyone is interested. D-E-F-U-S-E.ca.
Oh, that's the diffuse guy. Oh, yeah. He's great. Oh,
that's Taylor.
Yeah.
He's wonderful.
Diffuse.ca. Yeah, we've talked about him before.
Yeah.
Oh, Steve.
He's Fire X-Ware is his handle, but yeah. he unmasked himself a while ago, yeah. Taylor.
That is Taylor, well done.
And so are we, my friend.
We are well done. Well and thoroughly done. What a fun show. What an interesting idea. Again, the whole purpose of this, of making it public, I know Steve would say this, is to get these arrows shooting at him, shooting at not him, but the idea, so that we can validate it. Yep. And, you know, some arrows have more wood than others, but pretty cool. I'm very encouraged.
People have worried about what if I lost it? What if it got loose? It's like, yes, that's a problem.
But that's a problem with everything.
Well, it is. And see, if there was an intermediary, if there was a third party, you could call them and say, oh, I lost my squirrel ID. Please cancel it.
Right.
Well, that would be convenient. But it would also represent a huge liability for the NSA who says, an opportunity for the NSA, a liability for the user, saying, we want to know every time this person logs in somewhere. So part of the fantastic benefit of this is it is one-to-one and it is cryptographically secure. There is some responsibility. What I said in that original page was, who do you want to have be responsible? You could farm that out. You could outsource the responsibility.
No.
But post-Snowden, no. I don't think anybody wants to do that.
That's the reason we need this. We've got, that's been solved if that's what you care about. But this is something that doesn't have that as an issue.
And with that comes some responsibility.
Right.
My solution is to empower the user with all the tools they need to protect themselves, to back themselves up securely, to clone between devices, to keep people from abusing their phone. You know, we'll give them those tools. With that comes some responsibility.
But with it comes
really good security.
Assuming you're grown-ups. This is a solution for grown-ups. If you want to be a kid, use Facebook Connect. It's fine. That's still.
And you don't have to use this everywhere. You can just use it on which sites supply it, where you feel comfortable using it.
Well, and it's my great hope that sites will supply it. I mean, I'm telling you, it all comes down to that. Now, I think you're going to I think we're vetting it. I think it's going to, knowing you and knowing your great group
the
there.
HTML5 editor of the W3C already has a dialogue open with me to talk about making it a standard.
So I think the key really is to get that in implemented so that sites have that. And they'll probably still give you Google Plus and Facebook Connect and all the other ways of authenticating, but it would be really nice if they'd add a little QR code, a little squirrel QR code, and make that be one of the options.
My guess is people will start asking for it. They'll say, hey,
I would. I'll ask for it.
Yeah, we'll make it easy.
Steve Gibson is at grc.com. If you want to participate in this conversation, grc.com/SQRL. You can also ask questions at grc.com/feedback. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SGGRC. Don't email him because he doesn't want to know. Go to the website. There's forums. There's plenty of ways you can have this conversation. He wants to have this in public, as it should be. It shouldn't be a back channel. It's got to be in public. Yeah,
we do maintain old style, because they're great, internet network news, you know, NNTP style forums.
Yeah.
You can, you know, Thunderbird is a good news reader. I use Gravity on Windows. And there's something called NewsTap for iOS devices, which is very nice. If you go to grc.com/discussions, or you can just find it under services on the main menu, that'll show you everything you need to know about how to set up and join. We've had a whole bunch of an influx of new people all coming on board in the grc.sqrl news group just in the last week, who are saying, hey, I want to write some code, or I want to talk about this. So everybody's welcome.
You can get copies of this show there as well. He's got 16 kilobit audio for the bandwidth impaired. He's got transcriptions written by an actual human being, Elaine Ferris. So that's really the most compact. And a lot of people like to read along while they listen. We have higher quality audio and even video available at our website, twit.tv/SN. And, of course, you always can subscribe wherever you get your podcast from, iTunes or Zune or whatever. And, in fact, do subscribe. That way you get every episode. You have a collection. This is, of all the shows we do, the one that you want to have the complete set. You want all, what is it, 300 and... What is it? 420.
425.
420. You want all of them because it's like having the Encyclopedia Britannica. It's just you want to have that on your shelf. And you can always go back and say, hey, what was that honeypot monkey thing that we... What was it? what was that?
Honey Monkeys.
Honey Monkeys, episode one, about 80 years ago. We do this show 11 a.m. Pacific, that's 1800 UTC, on twit.tv every Wednesday. Please stop by, say hi. Thanks once again to Tom Merritt for filling in during my vacation. It won't happen again for another year, that's or thereabouts. I'll be watching TV tomorrow night with you, Steve. Anything else we need to say? I think that's it. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'll be seeing Gravity tonight. Sandra Bullock and
Hear good things. I'm dying to see this.
I'm so surprised. It looks so dumb from the previews. It's like, oh,
I thought, how are they going to get 2 hours out of Sandra Bullock twirling in space? But apparently,
exactly.
They did.
It's actually it's only an hour and a half, so okay. That the burden was a little bit lower. But I mean, everybody is raving about it. So
all the geeks love this. It's
Jenny loves
great.
3D, so yeah. We're going to see it in 3D apparently. And she was on Jon Stewart a couple nights ago, and if we're to believe John, he really, really liked it too. So
all the geeks are loving this. It's yeah. I was surprised. I agree, but it's a great director, and you know who doesn't love Sandra Bullock and George Clooney and space.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Stephen, we'll talk. We'll get your review next week, and we will talk then. Thanks for joining
us.
Thanks,
my friend.
Bye. Security.